I'm with Michael Harding. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. And how are you, Marty?
I'm all right, Michael.
How's your heart? That's what made him laugh.
We were shooting the breeze and chatting away, and he just turned to me and says, "How's your heart?" That's the end of me now. I'm finished.
Like
now.
I was an undertaker.
Yeah, he's looking for work. That's exactly what it is. Well, Chest Pain is the book. I'm thrilled to have you in. I know you've been doing it rounds and rounds.
I'm thrilled to be in.
It's lovely to have you here. So it's lovely to be anywhere, probably.
It's lovely to be anywhere. I heard a musician say that one night. Do you know the way they say it? Do you know the way musicians on the stage, they say it? Like, they play the first tune and they say, "Oh, hello, it's great to be here." And this musician was playing one night and it was his first opening tune. And then he said, "Oh, it's great to be here." And then he said, "In fact, it's great to be anywhere."
That's right.
It's great to be alive.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, and in your case particularly, after your moment, Chest Pain is the book, A Man, A Stent and a Camper Van. There's so much to talk about, but I have to start by saying, firstly, to explain, I have been, as you know, a fan of your work between Talking to Strangers and Hanging with the Elephant About Your Mammy on Tuesdays. I'm a Buddhist, all of that. So you've all of that work behind you.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you weren't writing.
I went to Warsaw because I normally go to Warsaw. Warsaw is my solitude.
Yes.
You can take 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And you meet nobody. The phone is off. Everything is off, and you can write.
And you have the flat. You go to this flat.
Yeah.
And you just take
I just do an Airbnb.
I know that. Yeah.
You'd be talking €20 a night.
Yeah, absolutely. And but it's just—is it about solitude?
It's absolutely about solitude.
Oh, right,
I think that for writing, you have to have that solitude. Or I have to have it anyway.
Yeah.
But last year, 2018, no ability to write at all. Couldn't write the book. Tried 2 months in Warsaw, couldn't write the book. And then it was so hard to write that I contacted the Irish Times and I said, I need a break from the column, from doing the column. And I dropped out of that in March and I didn't go back to it the whole year. And I found myself going into churches. And
here?
No,
in Warsaw.
Mostly in Warsaw, there's a very beautiful Orthodox church, cathedral in Prague and Warsaw. And I used to go into that and I was drawn to it every morning. Like, I'd get up in the morning, I didn't want to write. I just wanted to go to the church. And I thought, am I going mad? Because I was there before. Like, I was, Catholic priest and all the rest.
That's right, but then you tried the Buddhism and all the rest.
I went round the world. Buddhism, psychotherapy, whatever you're having yourself.
So what was going on in the church?
Well, there was nothing going on except I was looking at holy pictures on the wall, icons as they call them.
Yes, and you have a few of them at home as well.
And sniffing the incense and thinking, oh, it's beautiful now. And I felt like, I really did feel very morbid and very much like, you know, I'm dying or something.
Fatalistic.
Maybe I'm just old. Maybe I'm just going to die.
But
that's
you're not
okay.
Old.
That's what I feared.
Yeah.
And then, after 26 gigs going around the country with me book on Tuesdays, I'm a Buddhist, and I'm in Blanchardstown, and I'm having chest pain for about 2 days, and one morning I wake up, and it's like a bus coming through the wind. It's like a lump hammer, someone hitting you on the chest. And I rang the emergency and the people from Blanchardstown Hospital, paramedics, were there within about 10 minutes. And they are amazing people. Paramedics, nurses. What they do, save lives every day of the week like it's their normal job.
Of course.
It's just a miracle every day.
It is astonishing. It's a vocation. It's a calling.
So I survived, didn't get any damage to the heart, put a stent in the next day, sent me home, and I felt immediately I could write. I felt immediately a sense of joy in my life. I don't know where it came from.
But had you been feeling, I say fatalistic, but had you been feeling sick, feeling ill, feeling?
I felt exhausted. I couldn't go up the hills.
Right.
I couldn't walk the way I used to walk.
Which you love to do.
Yeah.
One of the things in the book you mentioned that you lied to your wife, as we all would say, Shum Grand.
Yeah.
Don't be minded me, it'll go away.
Yeah.
And you thought it was greasy sausages at one stage.
Ah, yeah. Well, I was out in Bray.
There are greasy sausages in other locations.
After a show in the Mermaid.
Yeah.
And the next morning I'm in the hotel and I'm having the breakfast. Now, I say greasy sausages, I mean beautiful sausages.
Of course. I got that impression.
And wonderful rashers.
Yes.
But, I was walking on the promenade. That's when the first attack came and I could not walk down the promenade. I was holding on to the railings. With the pain in my chest, and I couldn't breathe.
Right.
I couldn't breathe, and still I did not think it was a heart attack. Sure, Why would it be a heart attack? Of course it's not. That's what we do.
Yes.
That's what everybody does. We lie to ourselves.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
You're having a big lump of pain in your chest and you tell yourself it's indigestion.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, but convince yourself.
I did that for 3 days until I nearly died. So if you're having these troubles, you know, I just say to people...
Because you got another fall. You had another pain, didn't you? Was it later that day or another day?
I did, yeah. Well, it went on for about two or three days.
2 or 3 days, exactly, yeah.
Until it happened.
So,
but, like, when it happened... It for me, I think the most amazing thing was some people would find a bit of depression after a heart attack.
Right.
I found myself depressed before the heart attack. I found that in the heart attack, for some reason, it was like, I can't explain this, but it was like the secret space in the heart, the place where you are completely alone, that you never communicate with anybody else, that kind of opened up for me.
Right.
And so, really what I talk about now in the book and in my life is just the heart, chest pain being a change of heart.
Yeah.
It's like I feel just slightly differently about the whole world and yet the world seems completely different.
Yes, yes.
And it's based on the fact that I feel a kind of gratefulness that I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. Knowing that you mightn't have been.
And in another sense... I feel I'm not here. I feel that in a strange sense, when you get a little knock from mortality, it's like a call. You're being invited into a different kind of dimension of reality, whatever happens to us in death. And I feel that once you get a little call, you start to look in that direction. You start to live kind of more detached in this world, because you realise you're not going to be here too long anyway.
Right.
And genuinely, I used to think that with my head, but I know it now. When you have a pain between your ribs for a couple of weeks when your stent is settling in,
yes,
you realise, you know, we really are only here for a short while.
That's right.
And when you start turning into what is inside you, what is kind of like... the abyss inside you, the ocean inside you, the eternity inside you. Here's what I learned. It's actually consoling.
Right.
It's actually beautiful.
It's acceptance.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, there's something absolutely exquisite about life, about human life and human awareness.
And do you think...
Because it passes.
Yeah, but do you think also a faith, therefore, has a huge role to play?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you've been searching that one for a long time.
Ah, yeah, and like I would have been, I'd have issues with the, you know, my own Catholic background and the priests and all the rest of it. Huge issues. But a time comes in your life where you say, like 35 years ago is when I left that organisation. But at a certain point you said, you know, that's all with the head. But where are you in your heart? Where are you? I try now to look at you with my heart. I try and look at the religion with my heart.
Yes,
I try and look at the ocean with my heart.
Yeah.
Where are you with your heart? And then I find that the Christian story and the story of kind of unconditional love and all the rest of it, it's very, very beautiful.
So does that
it's
mean...
It's very beautiful.
Are you less... Because we talked...
And I'm not going back to Christianity because I tell you...
No.
Islam is Islam. I have a friend who is... You know, a man from the Middle East, and the poetry of Sufism, the wisdom of their tradition in Islam is also miraculously beautiful. So here we go. You got Buddhism, you got Islam, you got Christianity. I think it's time to put all those books on the shelf together,
right?
Rather than this is your thing and this is my thing. I think they're really... Do you know the story about the elephant in the dark room?
Tell me.
There's a lovely story. There's a big dark room and there's 5 or 6 people in it, professors, and there's an elephant, but they can't see the elephant. So to figure out, well, how would we describe it? And one fella gets a leg and he says, well, it's a big, long kind of thing here, like a leg. And then another fella says, no, wait a minute, there's a trunk here, it's very loose, right? And another fella gets the tail. So everybody is touching the elephant in the darkness.
Right.
And they're all experiencing different bits of it. But they're all experiencing the one elephant.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And they say that's a Sufi story about how all religions are trying to touch the same reality.
Yeah.
So there is nothing but God out there. There is nothing inside you but God. But the different religions are only different ways of talking about it.
As the fellow said, it's a beautiful ideal if only we could make it a reality. One of the things we touched on last time, and I want to play a tune, one of the things we touched on last time was melancholia and all of that. Has that changed now because of the stent?
I haven't had any depression in the past year.
Isn't that wonderful?
Now, that I don't know why that is, because a lot of people would find a little bit of depression.
Because we talked about that a lot when you were here last time. Isn't that gas?
Yeah. But there's another idea about depression. I remember once on television saying that, you know, depression can be a growth moment. That in actual fact, if you're depressed, it's a growth moment for your consciousness. And that's one way of putting it, and it's a very secular way of putting it. There's also a way of putting it in poetic terms, and that is that depression is a longing for the other world, right?
Right.
That in people, sometimes they get so dysfunctional in this world, there's a deep longing. I'm going to say this now, it's an awful thing to say.
Yeah.
There's a longing for God. There's a longing for the eternity of bliss and peace and perfection. And it manifests on the surface as depression. So that it's an important thing, I think, for people suffering depression to know that deep inside there are also very beautiful things going on in your heart underneath the surface. The surface may feel like I'm having a bad day today.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that I've suffered depression from about 2011 until 2018. That's 7 years.
Yeah.
And it was tough enough days now. And I've written about it. But I just have this strange sense that when I got this awful moment of a heart attack and I'm lying in Blanchardstown Hospital on the pillow and I'm feeling like, I don't need religion now, I don't need meaning, I don't need philosophy, I'm just here. And it's amazing to just be here alive.
Yes.
That for me was a kind of an awakening of my spirit that I hadn't done all my life. I was living out of the head and I wasn't living out of the heart, and then the universe gave me an awful effing shake.
It did. A jolt came.
Yeah.
The sun is out, the sky is blue, there's not a cloud to spoil the view, but it's raining, raining in my heart. Says clear today, he doesn't know you've gone away, and it's raining, raining in my heart. Oh, misery, misery, what's gonna become? I tell my blues they mustn't show, but soon these tears are bound to flow, 'cause it's raining, raining in my heart.
Raining in my heart. I just thought we'd play an old tune, seeing as it seemed appropriate. I have Michael Harding with me. By the way, you're out tonight, aren't you? I saw something. You're out tonight. Chest Pain is the new book. It's number one, of course. You're out tonight in... is it a charity event you're doing tonight?
It's
for palliative care, am I right?
Palliative care,
that's right. You're in the Radisson Blue.
That's right.
I knew it would come to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in Radisson Blue around tea time, I think.
Yeah.
That's okay. Because you're always on the go and the tours and all of that. So you keep it going, but you have a story to tell and you love telling it and you tell it so well. And I think that's the great joy and why people love to read you in the Irish Times and are glad you're back. By the way, by the way, did a couple of bits recently. Where was it? The Chaos of Love Can Help a Mother with Her Loss. I thought that was an amazing piece. It was about the bride from Shenyang. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
The beautiful story.
A sky.
Yes. It was in. Yeah. When was that? November. So it's only gone. A beautiful story about the woman mourning the loss of her son.
Yeah.
Which I thought was. And she'd come over here. That's what it is. Yeah. She'd come over here. And the other one was I Know of Men Who Don't Go Out for Months, which was in the Irish Times recently as well, which again is that thing that you've touched on all along.
Yeah.
Is the fact of...
Well, I was... Yeah.
Declan Lynch talked about that in the Sunday Times many times. He used to call it the poor elfless. And it's that thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that men who are solitary and are sometimes not necessarily solitary, but they don't go out, they don't have a life outside the four walls, generally speaking.
Well, I know what it's like to be stuck in the bed and psychologically not be able to get up and psychologically not be able to go out the door. And to be overwhelmed by the idea that you'd have to meet somebody. And I've lived there in that enclosure for weeks and weeks and weeks in depression. And it's a terrible, terrible place to be. And you always feel, this will never end.
Right.
And one of the most helpful things you can say to somebody, if they're in that situation and you love them and you're close to them, reassure them.
Yeah.
The depression will go away. It's not forever. It never is forever. Depression, no matter how bad it is.
Sure.
And that's a huge, important thing to say to people.
But, of course, there are many and different ways to get out of that situation, and it might work for one, it won't work for another, and so on.
That's right.
So there's so
that's
many
right.
different
yeah.
ways.
Yeah.
There's no pill.
No.
That just
for some people, it's one kind of therapy.
Yeah.
I went to a counsellor for about 2 years on
you
and
did.
Off, and she was hugely... hugely crucial in my healing.
Yes.
Right? So psychotherapy would like for me be a foundation of everything.
That's right.
And the only way that I'd look at religion is I'd say to people, now, don't be believing in God and all that stuff. Don't worry about that. And don't worry...
Which is funny coming from you when you think about it.
Yeah, yeah, but you have to get away from that. You have to get away from all this notion of, oh, is there a God? Is there an afterlife? And why the church might be misogynistic or something.
Yeah.
That's all there. Get away from it.
Yeah.
Wash it out of you. But then... examine maybe Buddhist practice, yoga practice, Christian practice, Islamic practice, Sufi practice. Examine them like psychotherapy.
Yes.
And the examination of them like that means, do they help you live in the present moment with other people more lightly? More lightly. And you'll find that they do.
Right.
Well, if they do...
then?
And if going to Mass in the morning helps you do that...
That's the thing.
Go to Mass.
It's what Frank Sinatra used to say, whatever gets you through the night.
Whatever gets you through the night.
Whatever gets
Absolutely.
You through the night. Isn't that the one?
Absolutely.
Listen, whatever got you through the night, you bought a camper van.
I did.
You did?
I did. And
Did you buy Donegal, was it? Donegal?
I bought a Donegal camper van
right.
in from a man in Convey, and it was a superb little camper van.
Right.
And I sold it on to a man in Meath, and I hope he's happy with it if he's listening.
Please God, how long did you have it then?
I only had it for about 9 months.
Okay.
And the reason was I wanted to go... I was coming out of depression, I was... I had my heart attack, I was writing the book, I went to Donegal, and I wanted to give thanks in Glencolumbkill to the holy saint Columbkill himself. So I did the pilgrimage in June last year.
Wonderful.
And in the camper van, I used to bring the lady wife, and the camper van was so small that it was like doing yoga or gymnastics in the back of the van, trying to lie down, the two of us.
Right.
So what I did then was I sold my car and bought a bigger camper van.
Oh, good man, yourself.
Mayo.
But that's gone as well.
No.
Well, they've kept that one.
I nearly live in it. When she gets annoyed at me now, she says, go on, go out.
It's parked beside the house.
I'm out in the van.
Yeah. You didn't build the thing overlooking the lake, did you, at the back of the house? You were going to build something, weren't you? There's talking about building a...
That was not in this one.
Yeah, no, not in this one.
No. In an earlier book, I talked about a story... of building a little hut for myself.
Facing away from the house.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did that. There was a lovely man came up, Christy,
yes.
a builder, and he built it for me. And he made a lovely job of it. And there I do sit
right.
for hours every day, thanking God I'm alive and looking at the lake.
Or in the camper van.
Or in the camper van.
Right.
Yeah.
So how far have you taken the camper van now?
I've taken it to Kilmallock.
Good man.
Yeah.
That's a fair whack.
I've taken it. I go a lot to Mayo now because I got the camper van in Castlebar.
Right.
Bought it in Arrow Motors there. But I go a lot to Mayo now. I'm getting fierce interested in Kilpatrick.
Yeah.
I think if I could climb that next year, it would prove that I was either...
Well, I was just going to say it without...
Yeah.
Would that be something?
It might kill me.
I mean,
it'd be interesting.
Don't risk... Why would you risk it? Don't risk it.
The moth has to go to the flame.
I know that. I know that. But hold back for a minute. You've only got over. You've only got the stent in. And is this camper van, will this make you self-sufficient now? Would the two of you be able to...
I have a toilet in it.
You have a toilet?
Yeah.
Have you a
shower.
Have you a cooker?
A cooker.
Oh, brilliant.
Two rings.
Yeah.
A basin. Flowing water.
No.
And an enormous double bed. When the lady wife gets into it on one side and I get into the other side, I forget she's there.
Do you?
I'd wake up in the morning and I say, oh, who are you? And she says, I'm the lady wife.
That's terrific.
Yeah. It's enormous.
It's a bit like a childhood adventure idea, isn't it? The idea that you can get into this self-sufficient machine and head off wherever.
Everybody who comes to visit us, they always say, can we have a look at the camper van, right?
Yeah.
And they're kind of adults, grown adults, and they're in the house and say, do you mind if we have a look at the camper van?
That's right.
And you bring them out, and the minute they step into it, they become children.
Yes.
Oh, look at this, and look at that.
That's right.
Oh, look at the little lights. Oh,
it must be terrific.
But it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I do also work in it because I can have a little desk in it, believe it or not. And I have a heater that runs off the diesel and costs less to heat than my office. And I can sit there all day looking out at the coast in Donegal or wherever, and right away, it's a lovely thing, it's a blessing.
Isn't it a wonderful thing? Yeah. A wonderful thing. Now that you feel the way you feel, and are you up to travel? Because I want to mention Sophie, your daughter. She's away, she's gone.
My beautiful daughter, Sophie. She left us.
She did, but it was a beautiful piece, but it was very sad the way you described how you were, because she's got a long way. It's not like she went down to Carlow.
No, Melbourne.
She went to Melbourne, Australia. Yeah. So, but the way you described it in the Times was something else. You were very cut up.
Yeah, I was very, very cut up.
And
it was just terrible.
Yeah.
And it seemed again like the shortness of life. You'd look at the little swing that she used to swing on, and you'd go around the garden. I was mowing the grass, and I was picking up old tennis balls that she used to play with, and she used to, you know, little games she'd have with the dog when the dog was... And suddenly the whole 25 years seemed to be 5 minutes.
That's right.
Felt like it's all over.
Yeah.
And there's me and the lady wife in the kitchen, a binary couple, looking at each other with an empty nest. And it was absolutely devastating. And I thought, am I going to go down into this? Am I going to, you know, go into misery now for about, you know, 6 months? And so it was the following day that I went to Mayo, Castlebar, and bought the camper van.
Really?
Yeah, it was an act of defiance.
It was.
It was an act of saying, listen, we'll enjoy ourselves
as long as
we have health.
That's true.
Why wouldn't we?
Isn't that right?
You have a daughter and a son or whatever, and by the way, we have a son who's in his mid-40s, I won't say what age he is, but a beautiful man, Simon Carman, a lovely sculptor, and he's married down in Fermanagh, so we're not entirely alone.
No, I know, but you're alone at home.
We're alone at home, and we did miss her for about 24 hours. And then we thought, isn't it great that she's out there having a bit of fun for herself?
Yes.
And she's working with horses in Melbourne.
Wonderful.
She's actually training race horses.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
So she's there.
She loves horses.
Would you travel? Can you travel?
No, I wouldn't.
Could you?
I'm amazed the amount of people ask me that.
No, but it's your child.
I say to them, what about the carbon print? Are you mad?
Oh, is that what it is?
Why would I cross the whole globe?
To see your daughter.
Fly over millions of people who are lying underneath me playing, starving to death.
I know.
Just to see the daughter.
Because...
Sure, I can see her on FaceTime.
You can't hug her face.
She can come home sometime.
Will she be... Is there a plan for her to come back soon?
I'm sure, yeah.
Please God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that would be very important.
Yeah.
You know? I have a message here from someone who says, I haven't been out for about 2 years.
Yeah.
This is from William Andrade. I'm 64 and I'm a very happy man in myself. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's a lovely wisdom, though, because, as I said, sometimes depression is a kind of a, you know, it's underneath it, there's a longing for something else.
Yes.
And maybe that person has found within their own heart the whole secret of the universe, which is that we are here. It is beautiful to be here.
And it's okay
to be there. Absolutely. Yeah.
Someone else said...
monastic wisdom that he's speaking of.
It is, actually.
Yeah.
So you brought me to tears, Michael. I faced my mortality 7 years ago and you just put words in my feelings.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Isn't that
because
something?
There are so many people, I have to say, who've really suffered.
Yeah.
You know, I'm only a sham in one sense. You know, talking up stuff. But I meet people who are deep in their wisdom and deep in their suffering. and I'm humbled by them every day of my life.
And they also, I suppose, because of the books and the column, they relate to you.
Yeah.
And therefore they probably tell you things they mightn't tell people they live with.
Maybe so.
I think there'll be a bit of that.
But I'll tell you as well.
It's the clergyman coming out.
The palliative care people, the nurses who do palliative care around the country, I have seen them at the deathbed of a friend 10 days ago. I've seen them at my sister-in-law's deathbed, my mother's deathbed.
Yes.
Like, what they do and their skill and their depth of spiritual wisdom in helping people look at those awkward moments in the end of life.
Yes, of course.
Is absolutely astonishing. They humble me, and they are so understaffed and pressurized by, forms to be filled out and the little details of bureaucracy, and really and truly, people I think don't appreciate that they are the glory of the health service in minding of people who are terminally ill.
Yeah,
palliative care nurses are astonishingly wonderful creatures.
They really are. And you're going to be there today in...
They're having a thing tonight in Radisson Blue, Golden Lane.
That's exactly where it is, in the heart of Dublin. And it's early.
It's about 5 o'clock. You'd have to look it up.
That's right. Yeah. Are you not on stage tonight now, Michael?
No, I'm talking to them, and that's all.
Ah, that's nice. Yeah. That's nice. And will you head home then, or will you?
At Christmas, I'll be happy with my turkey.
Good boy.
My wife.
Lovely.
The child Simon.
Yes. In touch with us.
Jesus, obviously, and the Earl Danger,
right.
And maybe a little bit of the great God of Sufi, and
that's right.
Maybe a little Buddhism as well, and.
Because you have the icons still up in the house.
Oh, I do.
You do, yeah. To frighten the nuns when they come in.
That's right.
one of the stories. I love your company. You're a joy. I have to finish because we're done. Chest Pain is the book, A Man, A Stent and a Campervan. It's hanging on to number one rigidly.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, well, listen.
It's doing beautifully.
Whatever it is, it's doing well. It's
I have to say, even
well.
Though it is, there are sad moments in it, there's an awful lot of joy in your writing, a lot of laughter and a lot of fun to be had for your
I
work
think that's
as well.
The crack. The lightness of life, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Michael, God bless you. I love your company and a very Merry Christmas to you, sir.
To you too. And thanks a million, Martin.
Not at all, my friend. And keep the faith. God bless.